listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I know firsthand what it is like to struggle. But I found the cure to binge eating, and now I help people all over the world find food freedom. And on this show, I am here for you too. Imagine waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. Wouldn't that be amazing? That is the goal here. Today, we're going to talk about the hidden triggers of emotional eating and how to overcome them. If you are listening on LA Talk Radio, you can feel free to call me with any questions or comments, 323-203-0815. If you're watching the live stream on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment or question in the comment box anytime. Okay, so I think I know the answer to this, but here's a question. Have you ever found yourself reaching for a bag of chips or a bar of chocolate after a stressful day? And maybe you notice that you binge eat when you feel low. Maybe you feel like you have no control over food. Well, you are not alone. Emotional eating, which means eating in response to your feelings rather than physical hunger, is a very common issue for a lot of people. And it is also a very complicated one. And we think often that we are triggered by food, and the answer is no. We are triggered by something else, something that is often unconscious or out of our awareness. But when we become more aware of these triggers, we can find new ways of dealing with them directly, and everything changes. So again, you know, food plays such a dominant role in our lives. It's not just about sustaining our health and our bodies. And by the way, we shouldn't just eat to live. Food is supposed to be enjoyed. It's one of the pleasures of life. We're supposed to enjoy it. But it also can be the way that we comfort ourselves, express love. Valentine's Day chocolates, right? And sometimes it's a way of coping with stress and stressful emotions. So today we're going to look at emotional eating, the triggers, and how to manage those triggers more effectively to promote healthier behavior, to stop emotional eating. It is possible. It is not about willpower. It is not about control. It's not even about food, really. So I'm going to dive into the common hidden triggers of emotional eating, and I'm going to give you some practical strategies to create the food freedom that you want and deserve, and it is possible for you. Yes, it is. Okay, so to overcome emotional eating, you got to first identify what the trigger is, because the trigger is not food. We think we're triggered by food, but that's incorrect. The true triggers are often the thoughts and feelings. Actually, thoughts lead to feelings, which lead to behavior that may be outside our awareness. They're hidden from us. So that's pretty much the definition of the unconscious. It's what's out of awareness, but not out of operation. So it's out of our awareness, but it has everything to do with what we are doing. And emotional eating is triggered by a lot of different things. We all know stress, boredom, you know, painful, difficult emotions, and using food to cope. But there are a lot of other reasons why we may be triggered that we don't know. Now, before I go into that, I also want to distinguish between emotional eating, mindless eating, and binge eating, because sometimes those terms are used interchangeably and they're actually not correct. So bear with me, because I think this is important for you to know. So mindless eating is often mistaken for emotional eating, but these are two distinct behaviors. They both have to do with food, and they both can contribute to overeating and gaining weight for some people, but they are different. So mindless eating means you're eating without paying attention to your body's hunger and fullness cues. And it's like, have you ever had a bowl of popcorn or some chips or you know, a bunch of cookies in front of you, and you're watching a show on TV and you're eating And suddenly, before you know it, the bowl is empty and you don't even remember eating all of the popcorn or all the chips or all the cookies. That's mindless eating. It's eating when you're really distracted and not being aware of the taste or the satisfaction of food. You're just on your son autopilot. And of course, it can lead to eating too much because you don't realize when you're full, you don't realize how much you're eating, and then you eat more than you intended. That's mindless eating. Also, social and environmental factors play a role in triggering mindless eating, like being in social situations where food is abundant or regularly, you know, just it's always there, like the break room at your office. It's sort of there and you go and you kind of automatically have that donut or something like that. That's mindless eating. Or seeing ads for food or passing by your favorite restaurant. These are external triggers that can lead to mindless eating. But on the other hand, emotional eating is different. It is driven by emotions. Has nothing to do with physical hunger, by the way. And it involves using food to cope with difficult emotions, to self-soothe, to comfort yourself. So if you feel stressed, if you feel sad, lonely, bored, whatever it is, and you're eating as a response to that, that's emotional eating. And specific emotions can trigger emotional eating. There's even an ice cream. There's an ice cream and it is called Bad Breakup. That's the title of it. Yeah. Ben and Jerry's has Chunky Monkey. This brand, I forget what brand it is. Bad Breakup ice cream. That's just emotional eating in a nutshell, right? You have a bad breakup, you feel bad, and you're eating ice cream to comfort yourself. If you're a fan of Friends, as I am, love Friends. I wanted to live in that New York apartment. How did they afford it? Anyway, you might remember Chandler like eating a bunch of ice cream after Monica broke up with him. So that's emotional eating. And emotional eating is not necessarily related to the amount of food that you're eating. It's the emotional state that's driving the eating behavior. You can do emotional eating without binging. And I'm going to get to the difference between emotional eating and binging in just a moment. When it comes to emotional eating, unresolved emotional issues, past traumas, as well as what's going on in the present can have to do with emotional eating. So we use food to numb ourselves, to distract ourselves from painful emotions or from painful memories. And it's really important that if this is something you're struggling with, do not go on a diet or try to resolve emotional eating through willpower or something like that, because you're just, you're just plucking a weed and hoping it doesn't grow back. In order to get rid of a weed for good, what do we have to do? We've got to dig out the root. And where is the root? The root is underground. It is hidden from us. We don't see it, but it has everything to do with growing that weed. So similarly, when things are out of our awareness, they're hidden from us. We don't consciously recognize we're being triggered, but that has everything to do with why we're turning to food. So it's really important to look at the roots, get to the root of the issue. Also, restrictive dieting, I think that's an oxymoron, restrictive dieting is... Dieting is restrictive, so dieting, can absolutely contribute to emotional eating and binge eating, because when you restrict yourself and you can only have certain foods, you will have a feeling of deprivation. And when we are deprived, we eventually want the thing that we think we can't have, so then we have it. Eventually, our willpower will fail, right? And we have the thing. And if we have a diet mentality that says, oh, I blew it. I ate 2 cookies. I might as well eat 20 cookies. And then you figure, oh, well, the day is really blown now. So I might as well have all the other things that I am not allowed to have by myself because I'm following diet mentality. And then you're back in the kitchen and you're eating ice cream and then there's the leftover pizza, or you're ordering DoorDash or whatever. And now you're in a full blown sort of binge situation. So dieting is really detrimental because there's a reason for the diet binge cycle, right? So breaking free from that dieting mindset, never trust a four-letter word where the first three letters spell die, that can really reduce the likelihood of emotional eating or binge eating. Okay, so emotional eating, it can be triggered by lots of factors, ones we're aware of, ones we're not aware of. And by identifying and understanding these triggers, which I'm going to get to in a moment, we can take proactive steps to overcome emotional eating and develop healthier coping mechanisms, which of course means then, you know, food becomes breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks rather than your best friend and your worst enemy. So quickly, what's the difference between emotional eating and binge eating? Seems like the same, right? Well, they're similar and yet distinct. So emotional eating is using food to cope with or soothe negative emotions. And it's just responding to our emotions with food, but not necessarily binge eating. So if you feel sad and you have a big bowl of ice cream, that's not a binge. That's emotional eating. If you're like, oh, that bad breakup ice cream, where is it? It's calling my name. I feel sad. I feel bad. I had a bad breakup or whatever. And I'm going to eat some ice cream. That's emotional eating. But that is not binge eating. Binge eating is a form of emotional eating, but it's like emotional eating on steroids. So it is also an eating disorder. It is a diagnosable and treatable eating disorder. It is the most prevalent eating disorder there is. More people struggle with binge eating disorder than anorexia and bulimia combined, way more. And most people who struggle with binge eating disorder don't even know they have an eating disorder. They think they have no willpower. They think they have no control. They think they're a food addict, right? They don't know that they are actually dealing with a really negative coping strategy. And so whereas emotional eating is just eating in response to emotions, binge eating is consuming large amounts of food, often in response to emotions, yes, but in a short period of time, feeling absolutely a lack of control and a sense of shame and remorse and self-hatred afterwards. So emotional eating is, yeah, I was sad, I had the ice cream. No. Binge eating is, I was sad, I had the ice cream, and then the this and the this and the this and the this, and now I hate myself. And emotional eating can occur occasionally. You know, we all sometimes emotionally eat, I guess, you know, right? Oh, I've had a tough day. I'm just going to have a cup of coffee and a couple of cookies. I'll feel better. Technically, emotional eating. Is it an issue? Is it binge eating? No, it is not. Binge eating is a severe disorder. It is a compulsive behavior that has really serious effects on our self-esteem and our bodies. So it can have both physical and psychological effects, which is why it's so important to recognize it is treatable. It is treatable. And also another difference between emotional eating and binge eating is the level of control. So emotional eating, it could be a conscious choice, right? Oh, I'm going to have that bowl of ice cream. Binge eating is driven by this urge that seems unstoppable. It's, you know, the Millennium Falcon being drawn to the Death Star. It's like, you know, the resistance is futile. I'm mixing Star Trek and Star Wars, I know, but you know, you get the idea. It feels impossible to resist. Once that food in the kitchen or wherever starts calling your name, it's like you got to answer, and then all bets are off. And it's a horrible experience. Also, with emotional eating and binge eating, emotional eating can happen every once in a while. Okay, you know, it happens. Binge eating really is quite frequent. It is at least once a week. To be diagnosed with binge eating disorder, it has to be once a week for at least 3 months. And often, of course, it's way more and way longer. And it can, by the way, lead to weight gain, but people think that binge eating always leads to weight gain. And a lot of people who struggle with binge eating are normal weight. So weight is not a factor in determining whether someone has binge eating disorder. Okay. So now let's get to those hidden triggers to emotional eating. And these often also pertain to binge eating. So I'm talking about emotional eating, but really, binge eating is kind of emotional eating. All right. So the first hidden trigger is me time, needing me time. So we live in a world that constantly demands our attention, constantly demands our energy. We're always taking care of other people, whether it's at work or at home with kids or aging parents and kids, or just life. We're just always continuously in a role that require us often to prioritize the needs of other people, whether it's parents, caregivers, as health professionals, as friends, in whatever capacity. A lot of us are always having to take care of other people. And that means navigating a fine line between your needs and needs of others. And sometimes your needs are left behind. In fact, women are socialized to feel guilty for even thinking about their needs. I was talking with someone yesterday and she said, well, isn't that selfish? No, it is not selfish to think about your own needs. The opposite of selfless, which is, I don't matter. It's all about you. What I want, what I need, that doesn't matter. I'm here for you. That's being selfless, and it is not healthy. The opposite of that is selfish, right? Which is, I don't care about you. It's all about me. In between is self-care, which is, sometimes I'm going to prioritize me. Sometimes I'm going to prioritize you. It's going to be situational and it'll depend on what's going on, right? But I matter too. If you have been selfless for much of your life, if you've been totally selfless, guess what? Whenever you start to think about you, you're going to feel selfish, which is why really important to think about self-care as in the middle. It's not that you're either selfless or selfish. It's that, selfish is on one side, selfless is on the other. And in the middle, there's a lot of space in between those. In the middle is self-care. So emotional eating can show up at times as me time, right? It can become this private ritual, which is just a few moments when you can disconnect from your responsibilities to other people and be alone with your thoughts, or just be alone. And it just gives you that sense of personal space, a tiny bit of solace during an otherwise very demanding day of taking care of other people. And when you're eating, when you're doing that, it's giving you something to do, right? So you're not just taking time for yourself. You're eating emotionally as a way of giving yourself that time. Always taking care of other people can lead to feeling powerless, like in your own life. You're always taking care of other people. It's like your time is not your own. So choosing what to eat, when to eat, and how much to eat in that me time can be a way of, on the one hand, exerting control over your time, over one aspect of your life. But if you feel out of control over food, it can be a way of displacing helplessness and powerlessness over some areas of your life onto food. So instead of, I feel so helpless and powerless about my situation, it gets displaced. And then it's, I feel so helpless and powerless over food. Look, I have no control. So that's something to really think about. Also, me time is important. It's like giving yourself a little reward, like a little reward in the middle of a day. If you're taking care of other people, whether it's kids or at the same time taking care of your aging parents, a lot of people are in that position, or just being the person responsible for taking care of the house, managing everything, all these responsibilities, you know, it can be overwhelming. And so then that delicious little treat, or a lot of delicious treats, that can serve as a reward to yourself. Like you're giving and you're giving and you're giving and you're giving, and maybe you're depleted and empty, and eating kind of fills you up and gives you a little bit of something for you, me time. Also, this me time of eating, if you're always thinking about the needs of others, it's emotionally draining. And if you're eating, you're not thinking, right? That's why we call it the binge zone. I guess, you know, also the emotional eating zone. You're just eating, you're not thinking, you're not feeling. And so it can be a barrier against certain feelings towards certain people that you feel guilty about having. So then you can feel guilty about food. Oh my God, I feel so guilty. I ate XYZ. Instead of, oh, I feel so guilty because I feel resentful. I don't really want to be doing this every day. Oh, I can't have that thought. That's mean. That's selfish. That's bad. So guilt over certain situations becomes guilt over food. Also in this me time, very simple, not psychological, physical. It gives you some energy. Sometimes you just take a moment. You're exhausted. You're thrashed. You go and you eat something to give you a bit of a pickup as well as a mental break. So of course, while emotional eating does give you temporary relief, you get a little bit of me time. It's a way of coping with the lack of me time, the lack of self-care. But of course it's temporary and ultimately it does not serve you. So here's what you need to do. You need to figure out sustainable and healthy ways to have balance and to have that me time and to address your emotional needs. If you need your own space, which we all do more or less, some of us need a lot of space, some of us need a little space, but we all need space. We all need, as Virginia Woolf said, a room of our own. She was talking about women, but I think it applies to all people. Find what is good for you and what me time works for you, so that you think about who you are, not who you are in relation to other people. We're wives, we're husbands, we're partners, we're parents, we're sisters, we're brothers, we're daughters, we're sons. You know, how we relate to other people is how we think of ourselves sometimes. But what about just you? You and your needs, you matter too. And again, if you feel selfish for considering yourself, remember, self-care is not selfish. It is actually the best thing you can do for yourself. If you want to stop emotional eating or binge eating, if you want to create a kinder, healthier, happier relationship with yourself, you've got to develop ways of self-care. And that includes giving yourself me time. Me time is good time. All right. So that's one of the hidden triggers that a lot of people don't realize. Another one is body dissatisfaction. That is a major trigger. You know, like you get up in the morning, you get on the scale, and you don't like the number. In fact, you hate the number. And now your whole day feels like it's ruined. Your day is just started and it's already ruined because you hate the number on the scale. And then what happens? Well, as you go through your day, you just feel bad. And if you feel bad and you don't have a way to feel good about yourself, you don't have a way to encourage yourself, validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself, comfort yourself with words, you're going to use food to feel better. So that's why body dissatisfaction and emotional eating are often closely linked. When you feel dissatisfied with your body, also, you might experience shame, guilt, self-recrimination, low self-esteem. That's really hard. That's really hard to feel that all the time. And that can then trigger the urge to eat as a coping mechanism, whether it's emotional eating or binge eating, because eating provides that temporary relief from those difficult, painful, awful emotions, because it distracts you. It comforts you, right? Of course, it doesn't last long. And then it's followed by that same guilt and shame, which perpetuates the cycle. By the way, guilt and shame, those are two different principles. Guilt is about behavior. It's about feeling bad about something that you did or didn't do, or about thoughts, and often thoughts about what you've done or not done. Or let's just use a food example. Oh, I feel so guilty. I ate way too much at dinner. I feel so guilty. I totally overdid it. So guilt is just about the behavior. You feel bad about the behavior. Or I really should have gone to the gym yesterday. I didn't go. It was just one of those days. I feel so guilty. So guilt, you feel guilty about something you've done or haven't done. Shame, on the other hand, is about yourself. So shame is, I ate too much at dinner. I totally overdid it. I hate myself. I'm so ashamed of myself. I feel terrible about myself. How could I have done that? I didn't go to the gym. Oh, I'm so lazy. I hate myself. I'm disgusting. So whereas guilt is about what you're doing, shame is about feeling bad about yourself, your very essence. And shame is vicious and pervasive. And you cannot hold shame about yourself and be kind to yourself. Shame is a sense of inner badness about you, and it's unbearable. And that's why it's really important to look at, if you're shaming yourself for your weight, to create a different attitude towards yourself. So research has shown that body dissatisfaction is a risk factor for developing binge eating, because for a few reasons. Well, one, let's just go back to dieting. People who are dissatisfied with their bodies are a lot more likely to go on a rigid diet. And of course, there's that diet binge cycle. So you have a problem with your body, you have a problem with your weight, you go on a diet, you feel deprived, your willpower can only last so long because it can only last so long. And ultimately, that triggers binge eating. And it also contributes to body dysmorphia, where you perceive your body in a totally distorted, negative way. And that feels terrible. That feels shameful. And when you feel a sense of shame, you cannot feel terrible about yourself on the level of shame and simultaneously support yourself, accept yourself, love yourself, encourage yourself, reassure yourself, be compassionate towards yourself. So because you can't do both, that you've got to get away from the shame, and food takes you away. It helps you cope. It comforts you temporarily, and the cycle continues. Now, people have said to me in the past, well, I don't get it. I know it's bad to eat all the cookies. I know it's bad to eat carbs. Not true, but that's what they think. I know I shouldn't eat an entire pizza. And yet I know it, but I still keep doing it. So what's wrong with me? Why do I do something when I know that it's bad for me? I know I want to lose weight, and I can't lose weight if I eat this way, if I'm binging or emotional eating. I know it. So what's wrong with me that I keep doing it? Well, here's the thing. When it comes to human behavior, especially emotional eating, binge eating, or any kind of human behavior, addictive behavior, compulsive behavior, any kind of behavior that, you know, doesn't make sense to you, but you can't stop it. It's not logical. It's psychological. Logically, it's, no, that's not good. So don't do that. But we don't operate that way. We're not robots. We're human beings. We're much more complicated. It's psychological. And that's because emotional eating, in this case, which is what we're talking about, or binge eating, it is doing something for you. It is a frenemy. It is a friend in that it is helping you cope. It is providing self-soothing. It's filling a void. It's making you feel better temporarily. In some way, it is doing something for you. But of course, it is an enemy in that it is also hurting you. Why can't you give it up? Because if you give up the enemy, you also give up the friend. If this is your primary way of coping, how do you get rid of your coping strategy? First, you've got to cultivate other ways of coping. So important. One of them, by the way, is if you wouldn't say it to a friend, a loved one, someone you care about, a child, do not say it to yourself. If a friend of yours said, oh, I've gained so much weight, or I hate my weight, or I'm really upset with my body, you wouldn't say, yeah, you're disgusting. You really need to go on a diet. I hope not. If you did, you'd be a terrible friend. But more likely, you would not say that. You'd say, hey, you know what? I get it. I love you. I care about you. I'm sad that you hate your weight. How can I help? You know, how about you talk to yourself the same way? All right. A third trigger to emotional eating is good stress. Good stress. What is good stress? All right. So when we associate stress often with negative events, right? We're so stressed out. Things at work are really stressful, or we've got a deadline, or someone's sick, or, oh, you're dealing with something, a stressful, bad situation. Good stress. So bad stress is called distress. You're in distress. You're in bad stress. Good stress, there's actually a name for that, but you know, not very many people know about good stress. But the name for it is eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, eustress. And that is, it's a weird name, like eustress. I'm just going to call it good stress. Good stress arises from positive events and positive changes in our lives. Good stress is definitely one of the hidden triggers to emotional eating, because there are things that are going on that are beneficial and positive, but we're also going through something, right? Good stress is we get a new job, we're preparing for a wedding, we're buying a home, we're going on vacation, right? These are all wonderful things, right? Why should they be stressed? Well, these events, although they are exciting, they are positive, yay, they bring about their own set of challenges, expectations, and demands. So this kind of stress, which we don't recognize as stress, we just think, oh, it's all good. What am I stressed about? It is a hidden trigger for emotional eating. Because there's several reasons. First is it leads to heightened emotions. Positive life events lead to intensified emotions, joy, excitement, anticipation. And when you are feeling these heightened emotions, even though they're positive, we also tend to celebrate when we feel heighten. And how do we celebrate? Often with food. Or we may just feel too revved up, even though, you know, we're excited, we're happy. Maybe we're too revved up in our bodies, and food can give us a bit of a sedative effect. Also, good stress, it's about positive changes in our lives. And that means adjusting to things. Change can be stressful even when it's good. And emotional eating can be a way of kind of navigating that. Like when you're changing. Like when you have a baby, it's a fabulous, amazing, wonderful thing. But you can also, and this is the thing people don't talk about, mourn your old life of when you didn't have to get up at 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. and this and that. You know, change can be hard. And we don't talk about it because we're only supposed to be happy about these changes, but we may feel mixed feelings, in which case we might turn to food to cope. Also, expectation and pressure. Good stress comes with a set of expectations, either expectations we're imposing on ourselves or from others. Like, there's pressure to enjoy this event or make the most of this experience. It could be overwhelming, and eating can calm us down again. And we might, you know, when you're planning a wedding, when you're planning a vacation, when you're doing all of this planning, you can feel overwhelmed. You can feel overcommitted. You could feel, you know, like, I just can't wait for this to be over, even though it's good, right? It could be too much. And then we're back to me time, right? Eating can be a way of giving yourself back a little bit of time, just time for yourself, kind of calm down. Also, good stress is associated with reward or recognition, achievements, positive milestones. Those come with a desire to reward ourselves. And how do we reward ourselves? Often with food. And so self-reward, or rewarding ourselves for this good stress or getting through something or celebrating it's associated with treating ourselves. I did this. I accomplished this. I deserve a treat. Where's the cheesecake? And also, as with everything, it can distract from underlying issues or challenges. And when we're so focused on, you know, what's going on in our lives or what we're doing, it and what we're eating, we're not thinking about other things. So and one way to distract ourselves, of course, is to eat. Maybe those thoughts start coming into your mind, you know, and then you shut them down by eating. You're getting married to Jack, but your mind is thinking about Joe. And then you're like, why am I thinking about Joe when I'm getting married to Jack? Oh, can't have that thought. No. Oh, let me eat something. And now I'm not thinking about Joe. I'm thinking about how could I have eaten that? How am I going to look in my dress? You know, a displacement, a distraction. So while good stress can be beneficial, too much of any type of stress, of course, is harmful. So we got to find ways of creating balance and managing stress effectively. That helps your overall well-being. When you are managing effectively and practicing self-care, guess what? You're not going to use food as a way of coping. And whether it is bad stress or good stress, responding to yourself in a kind and helpful way, no matter what is going on in your life, if you don't like your weight, if you're feeling stressed, if you need me time, if you're upset about a situation, responding to yourself in a kind and helpful way, as you would a friend, using a compassionate tone and practicing self-care is the key. It really is the key. Changing your critic into a friend, being supportive of yourself. These things go such a long way to changing your relationship with food, to have a healthier, happier relationship with food. You have to have a healthier, happier relationship with you. You have to respond to yourself differently. And very important is cultivating a way to self-soothe with words, validating yourself, acknowledging yourself, and also doing things that help your body relax, or doing things that bring you joy. So exercising, yeah, that's a great way of relieving the physical effect of stress, but it doesn't apply to the emotional. So that if you're really pissed off and you go to the gym and you hit a punching bag, that's going to feel great. But it's not going to get rid of your feelings. Those need your attention. Those you have to process. And where most people go wrong is they process it by using positive thinking or, you know, trying to gratitude away. These positive thinking, it has a place, but it is not, you're not supposed to weaponize positive thinking to stop feeling something. So if you're upset and you're thinking about all the reasons why you shouldn't be upset, oh, it could be worse. It's not so bad. Other people have a much harder time than I do. I'm not going through anything that bad. At least I have this and that. That your positive thinking, you're trying to positive think away your feelings. That's not healthy. That's dismissive, nicely dismissive. Instead, you've got to say, yes, I'm upset. Of course I am. How else could I feel other than upset given the situation? I'm definitely upset, but you know what? I'm going to express it. I have every right to feel it. And you know, maybe then you can say, after you express it, then you can say, but you know what, you know, in the scheme of things, I recognize this isn't like so bad, but only do that after you acknowledge and validate what it is that you are feeling. All right. A fourth hidden trigger to emotional eating is childhood trauma. Again, emotional eating is not a weakness. It is not about lack of willpower. It is a coping strategy that may have originally developed because of some kind of trauma. And we often believe that the past is over. The past is in the past. Right? Why are we talking about the past? Why are we thinking about the past? The past is over. Oh, but no, the past is not over. The past is often influencing the way that we are in the present. For example, if in the past you had a judgmental parent, nothing you ever did was good enough, and now you are not living with that parent, perhaps that parent is not even living, and yet you have become judgmental and critical of yourself. You have taken that experience of the past and brought it into the present, and that is how the past haunts the present. So that's why emotional eating and childhood trauma or trauma of the past are closely linked. Even though it may not seem like your past has anything to do with your current situation. And childhood trauma refers to any distressing, difficult, traumatic experience. It could be physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, witnessing violence, that's big T trauma. And by the way, there are different kinds of trauma. There's big T trauma and little T trauma. So big T trauma, that's major horrible situations, life-threatening, serious harm, abuse, natural disasters, things like that. And they have a significant impact in your life, of course. But little T trauma is less severe, but chronic traumatic experiences that may not be life-threatening, but they still have an extremely negative impact on your sense of well-being. So bullying, emotional neglect, divorce, ongoing stressors like financial difficulties, relationship problems, these are little T traumas. And they contribute to emotional eating. Because when we experience trauma of any kind, we turn to food. We may turn to food to cope and find comfort. When we don't have other reliable ways of comforting ourselves and self-soothing ourselves, food becomes that source of comfort and a means to numb those painful feelings. And then we might rely more and more and more on food to regulate our emotions. And so, you know, what do you need to do differently? You've got to heal from the past. You've got to recognize what in the past is affecting you in the present and go through a mourning process of what happened and what didn't happen. We often only mourn what happened, but we don't mourn what didn't happen. You know, we mourn, oh, I had this, you know, neglectful, difficult childhood, but we don't mourn, but I didn't get to have a safe, loving, affectionate experience of a family. How sad that is. So by mourning and processing and coping with all of what happened, we can find new ways of self-soothing. You see the through line in this, whatever the trigger is, finding new ways of self-soothing and comforting yourself and responding to yourself is always the answer. Okay. The fifth hidden trigger is our relationship with other people. People can be unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable. And unlike people, food is predictable, reliable, and available. And so when we have issues with relationships, when we mistrust relationships, we may turn to food for comfort instead of to people. And keep in mind that our experience, our expectation of relationships is tied to our earliest relationships. Our first experience of relationship is actually as infants being fed. We're held in a parent's arms. We're cozy. We're safe. Maybe eyes are looking down at us with delight. And we feel this blissful state of connection with someone else as we are being fed. This is why we turn to food for comfort. This is why we associate food with comfort. When we talk about comfort foods in our culture, we're not just talking about comfort foods. We're talking about a wish to be comforted. That's what comfort food is really all about. And so there's this association between relationship and food that can go awry. And when people let you down, when they're unreliable, unavailable, unpredictable, when they reject you, when they treat you badly, people can become scary and you want to keep your distance. And maybe we feel then we don't get close to people. We feel lonely. When we're lonely, guess what? Food can symbolically fill the void within. We can also isolate, disconnect from people. You might create kind of a false persona where you go, you meet your friends for dinner, you pretend everything's fine. They say, how are you? You're hurting inside, but you're like, I'm great. I'm good. How are you? And then you go out to dinner and you eat a salad in front of them and pretend everything is fine. And you go home and you scarf down all the pizza where you can just finally just be yourself and eat what you want. Or maybe you don't trust that people like you. You know, you put on that happy face and you try to be who you think they want you to be. Bottom line, when people are scary, food is safe. So one way to address this is to take small steps to show your true self to other people, to have needs and wants, to allow people to be there for you. Otherwise, you're going to take care of all the people in your life. You're going to show up for them, and food will take care of you. So we're almost out of time. So I just want to say that the next step is to really identify what are your emotional triggers, uncover your personal patterns. Because once you recognize, yeah, I'm always using food sort of as me time, or yeah, I do feel bad about my body and it makes me feel bad about myself. And then I'm using food to just kind of escape my own mean voice, or yeah, I don't trust people, so food is safe. Or I'm re-traumatizing myself by being judgmental and critical of myself as I was treated, or, you know, all of these things. When you heal these roots, everything changes. So just pay attention to what are your triggers, what are, you know, what are the situations that trigger emotional eating? What are the people? What's going on? Are there any specific situations, people, or places that trigger you? Just be curious, not critical, pay attention, keep a journal, and really look for those patterns. Once you see the pattern, you'll be able to address what's really going on. Okay, that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. And for a deeper dive into all of this, be sure to check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, and now the new companion workbook, which I'm so proud of. I'm so excited about this, getting so much good response about the Binge Cure Journal. So these are both available on Amazon. Check it out. Stay curious, not critical. And I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.